Hello, everyone, and welcome to Crush Course, the podcast for the wine curious. I'm your host, Sarah, coming to you from Sonoma Valley, California, and today I'm going to be taking you through how to taste wine. No one is born an expert taster. It's a skill that you have to learn and then practice. But don't let that intimidate you. It's much easier than a lot of people want you to think. And it's important to know how to taste wine too. Once you sort out what sorts of wines you like and know how to describe them, it'll be all the easier to find more wines that will be to your liking. So, let's get to it, shall we? Evolutionarily speaking, our senses, particularly smell and taste, were developed as the first line of defense against rancid, toxic, or poisonous foods. Today, we don't really think of them in such a way. Our senses act as our tools to experience the world, including wine. When we taste wine, we are using more than just our sense of taste. We use our sense of sight, smell, and taste to not only identify wine varietals and winemaking style, but to understand what sorts of wines we enjoy. As I sit writing this, I am taking myself through these steps with a big glass of Gigondas, which is a Grenache Syrah blend originating from the southern Rhone in France. I would highly encourage you to crack open a bottle and follow along with these steps. Unless you are, of course, driving home from work, doing pump overs, or handling any sort of machinery. In that case, best to hold on to this episode until you can safely try it out for yourself. Now, pop that cork and pour yourself about a quarter cup's worth of wine. You can pour yourself more later. But while we're examining the wine, we want room to tilt and swirl the glass without worrying about spilling the wine. Also, it might be a good idea to have a pen and paper handy to make notes about the wine as we go through this process, just so we don't forget anything. So the first step is to look at the wine. Seems pretty easy, doesn't it? Well, it goes a bit beyond just the color. Take my wine, for example. It's a blend of Grenache and Syrah, both of which are red varietals. So one could call it a red and leave it at that. But we have to go a little more into it. What sort of red? Bright crimson? A deep purplish burgundy? Same goes for whites. Not all whites look the same. The color, hue, and opacity of a wine can tell us a lot of things. But for now, we're going to focus on just two. First, it tells us which grape varietal your wine may be made of. And second, it will tell us how old the wine is. Each grape varietal will have a different intensity and tone of color that will be reflected in the finished wine. For whites, the more acidic Mediterranean and Spanish wines will be a lighter, nearly clear yellow color, while the French varietals, like Chardonnay and Viognier, will naturally produce a deeper, more golden color. For reds, the lightest varietals will be Pinot Noir, Gamay, and Nebbiolo, and these can sometimes be so light in color and hue that you can actually see through the wine. The richest, darkest reds will be Cabernet Sauvignon and Barolo, and will be completely opaque. As wines age, they tend to develop more golden amber tones in whites, and a red brick-like color in reds. A young white will be much clearer, more of a straw yellow, and young reds will be a truer, nearly purple-red color. This may not be evident when you first look at a wine, but if you tilt the glass just a little bit, make sure you do this over a white piece of paper or another white surface, and look at the edge of the wine, it will show you its color more truly. Young wines will exhibit more of those fruity, floral characteristics. They'll be fresher and more vibrant. As they age and the wine slowly metamorphosize within the bottle, they will bring out more of those earthy, herbaceous notes, as well as aromatics that I can only describe as academic. Think leather-bound books, tea leaves, and the musty, aged smell of a well-loved library. Typically, when people first start drinking wine, they will lean more towards younger, fresher wines, and slowly work their way into the older, more savory vintages. A quick note on aging wines. White wines are usually considered young if they are consumed within 1 to 4 years of the vintage on the label. Reds, meanwhile, can hold up quite a bit longer before developing these aged characteristics, usually around 4 for lighter reds like Pinots, and up to 8 years for the bigger, more tannic reds like Cabernet Sauvignon. A lot of times, when the wine is best to be enjoyed is based on the winemaker's vision for the wine. So when in doubt, it's best to do a quick Google search to see if the wine you're looking at is best had young or best to let rest for a little while. For me personally, I don't have the patience or the space to age wines, so I typically opt for younger wines or buy ones that have aged and are ready to drink now. A few more things in the sight category. Check the legs. No, the wine doesn't have actual legs. This is what we call the wine that sticks to the side of the glass as you tilt it. This will be a visual indication of how much alcohol is in the wine. As the wine sticks to the side of the glass, the water will evaporate out, leaving the alcohol stuck to the side of the glass. It's a nifty phenomenon called the Gibbs-Marangoni effect. It's also good to note if the wine appears thicker or more viscous. This could tell us that the wine has higher alcohol, higher sugar, or a combination of the two. We also want to look at the bottom of the glass to see if there is any sediment in the wine. Sediment is nothing to be scared of. This is just extra bits from the grapes as well as the yeast during fermentation. It has become a very popular trend in winemaking in California to forgo filtering out this sediment. The belief is that the filtering process takes too much from the wine, essentially stripping out character that the winemaker works so hard to develop. So rather than risk it for aesthetic's sake, they will skip filtering when they bottle the wine. It's sort of the same philosophy behind hazy, unfiltered beer. Gives it just a bit more oomph. So for my wine, I would describe it as a deep ruby. Bit cloudy, but still clear. No sediment, and seems pretty typical in terms of viscosity when I swirl it. I would guess it's dry and has little residual sugar. The edges of the wine are certainly not purple, but they aren't quite that orangey brick red yet. About the same sort of red as the wine itself. So I would say that this isn't too young, but it is certainly no more than 5 years old. Once we've finished visually examining the wine, the next step will be smelling it. Tilt the glass at about a 45 degree angle and hover your nose over the lip of the glass. The first sniff will essentially prepare your senses. We will do this for both smell and taste. The first exposure to the wine is just to prime the sense. Think of it almost like painting a wall. If you throw the color on right away, it may not look quite like the swatch you got from the paint store. But if you put down a coat of primer first, the color will be truer and purer. We always want to prime our sense of smell and taste before starting to think about describing the wine. That way, no residual tastes or aromas will interfere with our enjoyment of the wine. Whether it was the gorgonzola you had on your salad for dinner, the gum you had on the way to the tasting, or even the wine you had before. After this first sniff, it's time to get a swirl in. I'm sure you've all seen folks do this at a tasting room or a bar, and most of you probably started doing it yourself because you thought, hey, they seem to know what they're doing. And while it sure does make you look dapper and cool, we swirl the wine within the glass to release the aromatics from the wine and concentrate them in the glass. Kind of like how herbs are always more potent once you crush them. We have to agitate the wine within the glass just a little bit. But not all aromas are created equal. They are, and say it with me now, varietal dependent. If you've ever gone wine tasting and wondered why some wines come in big, bulbous glasses and others came in thinner, more egg-shaped ones, well, when serving wine, we may choose certain glassware to help enhance or make it easier to perceive the aromatics in a wine. Pinot Noir will always be served in a bigger, almost fishbowl-shaped glass, hence why they are named Burgundy glasses. This is because, much like its color and tannins, Pinot Noir is a bit lighter in the aromatics department. But by giving the wine more airspace within the glass, allows for more of those aromatics to accumulate so they are more concentrated and more defined when you go to smell them. Chardonnay will also be served in a Burgundy glass for the same reason. It's all to help you better experience the wine. Now, don't feel like you need to rush out to Home Goods and get yourself a whole new set of glassware. At home, I only have one set of wine glasses, and they work fine for everything. You may just need to spend a little bit more time diving into those lighter wines to really get their full personality. The aromatics that we get off of a wine is divided into three categories: primary, secondary, and tertiary. The primary aromatics are going to be coming directly from the fruit. The skins, the pulp, the whole shebang. These are going to be all those fruity notes, as well as floral and herbaceous aromas as well. The secondary aromas are going to be coming from the winemaking process itself, most predominantly the yeast during the fermentation of sugar. Some secondary aromas you may pick up will be more on the savory side: Parmesan cheese rind, beer, and a bready nuttiness. And finally, tertiary aromas will be produced during the aging of the wine. Earlier, I mentioned that as wines age, they will show more of their savory, almost library-esque aromas like leather or tobacco. But we can also get some sweeter, baking-type aromas from oak aging. Depending on what sort of oak you use and for how long, we can also get notes of vanilla, baking spices, and toasted nuts. Now that you know all the different types of aromatics, let's take this step by step. For the primary aromatics, what sorts of fruits or flowers do you smell? When you first start tasting wine, start with broader categories, like citrus fruits, tropical fruits, or red fruits, rather than getting hung up on being too specific right out of the gate. It's almost like looking at a painting in a museum. You have to look at the big picture before you get closer and marvel at all the details. As you practice more and become more familiar with typical wine aromas, this will become easier. My best advice is to explore your produce section at the grocery store or at the farmer's market. With time, you will build up an aromatic Rolodex. As you start out, it may also be useful to reference an aromatics wheel. I'll link one in the episode description. Now, I have to be honest. I have committed one of the cardinal sins of wine tasting. I started making dinner just as I poured myself this glass of wine, and now my entire house is completely overwhelmed with the smell of curry, particularly all those spices. So it's going to be incredibly difficult to smell anything in this wine. This is a good time to talk about what I like to call aroma taint. This is when you are trying to smell a wine, but some other aroma in the vicinity is so strong that you can't smell some or all of the aromatics in the glass. Whether you are hosting a wine night or going out wine tasting, it's hugely important to forego any perfume or cologne, strong-smelling foods, or any other pungent aromas that could overpower the aromas coming from the wine. Let's just pretend that my sense of smell wasn't being bombarded by the vindaloo curry. For this wine, I would guess I would get loads of red fruit, mostly raspberries, a little strawberry, and a bit of dark fruit too. Overall, a very fruity wine, but there may just be a bit of a floral note. Jasmine, I think. No significant secondary or tertiary aromas. I would guess that the winemaker wanted this wine to be fruit-forward and drank young. After you have swirled and sniffed and written down the aromas you smell in the wine, we move on to our last sense, and that is taste. Just like with our sense of smell, we want to prime our palate with a quick sip of wine. Then, on the next sip, let the wine linger a little in your mouth. You almost want to swish the wine around in your mouth, making sure that it has coated every surface. Then, spit or swallow the wine and think about what your mouth is feeling. I'm sure when you learned about the senses, you learned that your taste buds can perceive sweet, sour, salty, and umami. When you're thinking about wine, we definitely want to pay attention to these, but there are a few other things we need to pay attention to as well. Altogether, these make up the structure of the wine, but I'm going to break it down into each category for you guys. So the first thing that you want to note is how sweet the wine is. Pretty self-explanatory. Typically, table wines will not be sweet. They will be dry. But for some wines, such as Riesling or sweet or dessert wines, they may have a bit of residual sugar in the wine, lending a bit of sweetness. Next will be the acidity, or how tart or sour the wine is. Wine is naturally acidic and will usually have a pH between 3 and 4. Remember that water has a pH of 7. More acidic wines will make your mouth physically salivate. Note if your mouth has naturally produced some saliva to compensate for the acidity of the wine. After acidity, we want to note how tannic the wine is. Now, this will only apply to red wines, since those are the ones that will have spent time on skins extracting those tannins during fermentation. Tannins will make your mouth feel dry, sandpapery, almost like it's full of cotton balls. Tannin content will depend on the wine varietal, as well as winemaking style and aging process. Typically, lighter reds like Pinot Noir, Grenache, and Gamay will have lower tannins than, say, a Zinfandel or a Tempranillo. If you aren't a fan of that drying sensation, definitely veer towards lighter reds or ones that have had some time to mellow out the tannins. Then, we want to focus on alcohol. Alcohol will be hot on the palate. If you've ever sipped on a liquor, you know that the alcohol will feel hot not only on your tongue, but also as you swallow it. High alcohol wines will almost have a bit of a burn to them, while lower alcohol wines will almost be cool on the palate. The last element is body, which is a little bit harder to describe. I like to think of body as how full or thick the wine feels on my tongue. Think of it as the difference between drinking water versus drinking milk. Not that any wine you drink should ever have the same body as milk, but that was the best comparison I could think of. For my wine, I would say that it's dry, pretty low acidity, low alcohol, and medium body. It didn't have any sweetness to it, it didn't make my mouth water, and it wasn't hot either. While it wasn't like water on my tongue, it certainly didn't have a robust body, so I'm gonna go with the safe answer of medium. So once we have smelled and tasted the wine, we have to ponder. Did you like it? No matter how in-depth you get when it comes to describing the aromas or contemplating the body of the wine, all that matters is if you enjoyed it or not. Unfortunately, I wasn't a huge fan of this wine. Curry aromas aside, it lacked something for me. The aromas were pretty subtle and the palate was flabby. This is a pretty common wine term used to describe wines that lack body and acidity. Just kind of meh. It was a good wine for the price. I think I paid about $10 for it at Trader Joe's, but I don't think I will be buying this particular bottle again. Whether you like the wine or not, you can use these notes to make a better decision next time. Maybe if you felt your wine was a little too oaky and toasty, you might want to look for wines that have had no oak aging, or have been aged in neutral oak. Maybe you tried a Mediterranean white and found it to be far too tart for your liking. In that case, head for French varietals that show more of that tropical or stone fruit character. Think Sauvignon Blanc or Pinot Blanc. Or, if your wine was like mine and was just a bit lacking, pull a 180 and try something totally different. After this wine, I am definitely craving something with a bit more tannin and more body, maybe a Cabernet Franc or a Merlot. Tasting wine is a lot like jean shopping. It's gonna take a bit of trial and error to learn what you like and learn how to find it. The best way to get more comfortable and better at tasting and describing wines is through practice. But why not make a little shindig out of it? If you have some friends who are keen to learn more and try new wines, gather them together for a wine tasting. Before the COVID pandemic, I was part of a weekly wine tasting group that had about 8 people in it, and we were from all walks of the wine industry. We always had a theme to narrow down our selection. One week would be Italian reds, and then the next week would be Chardonnay, in any style you could find. Pour everyone a glass and talk through the aromas, the flavors, and what you think of the wine. It's a great way to expand your palate, catch up with friends, and if you're like me, have an excuse to arrange a delicious cheese and charcuterie spread to enjoy after you've tasted through everything. See? Studying can be fun. Now it is time for our wine of the week. This week's wine was very generously gifted to me by my friend Colin, who works at Groth in Napa Valley. This is the 2019 Groth Chardonnay from their Hillview Vineyard. There are not many wines I'm hesitant to drink, but one of them is Chardonnay. I think I've been subject to just one too many California Chardonnays that were overly oaked and aggressively creamy. I don't know who coined the term, but I affectionately call these sorts of Chardonnays butter bombs. I just think it's such a shame to overpower the natural fruit character of Chardonnay with all that oak. But this Groth Chardonnay was just the type of Chardonnay that I adore. It is still definitely a Napa style, but rather than masking the fruit with oak, it emphasizes and supports it. This wine had a bit of golden apple and lemon rind on the nose, as well as some toasty almond aromas. When I took my first sip, I was blown away by how balanced it was. The oak, the acid, the alcohol, all working together in harmony. I couldn't help but do a little shimmy. Not only is it delicious, but it's pretty easy to get your hands on a bottle. Groth is distributed nationwide to grocery stores as well as wine shops, so you can very easily pick up a bottle for yourself. If you're like me and a bit of an ABC, that isn't anything but Chardonnay, let me know what you think of this one. Halloween is coming up, and I was inspired to do something a little bit different for next week's episode. When you think of wine country, you probably think of sprawling vineyards, historical estates, and fine dining. But did you know that there are ghosts in wine country? Even right here in Sonoma, you aren't entirely alone when you visit some of our most famous wineries. Tune in next week to learn all about Haunted Sonoma. I'm Sarah, and this has been your crush course on how to taste wine. Until next time, cheers! Now, scooch! I said scooch!